Welcome to episode 383 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Hey, we are back again. You know, it feels like, you know, frankly, it kind of feels like we haven't been doing the greatest job of getting these back to back, at least together. So it's nice to be here back with you again, Richard.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed the last episode, and I missed your appearance at the recent Geeks Network meetup. I'm really bummed about that, but I did make an appearance.
You did. And that was a lot of fun. Even just having you remotely was still a lot of fun. So we will talk about that later near the end of the show, because there are some announcements that came out of that that we would like to share with you guys. But for anybody who was at the meetup this past weekend and that I got to meet, it was awesome meeting all of you. We love these community events. So it was great getting to meet you guys and getting to show you guys some cool technology like some Plex stuff. So with that, we're going to get into our news, because we don't actually have any listener feedback to share this week. If you'd like to send us some for next week, you can shoot an email to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So Richard, let's go right into the video news of the week. And of course, starting it off with some Plex news. We announced just a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week even, that Plex has released a new DVR feature. I think it was 2 weeks ago. And they've already released some updates to it. They've also released a new UWP app. Well, actually, the UWP itself isn't new. They had released a UWP app for Windows PCs a few weeks ago, bringing a new user interface to everybody. We talked about that a lot on the show already. Well, they've updated that. They've brought support for Cortana. So now you can use your voice and say things like, shuffle the show Archer on Plex. And it'll do that, which is cool. They've also added Continuum support. And what you might be thinking is, well, what do you mean Continuum support? It's a desktop app. Well, that's kind of the news here. They've now released the UWP version of this app on Windows 10 mobile. Yeah. It was something we had been expecting, weren't quite sure when, and they got it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see this, because we talked about this when it came out, that it was notably not on Windows 10 mobile yet, but this certainly rounds that out. And I love that they're doing something with Continuum. How's that going to work?
Well, that's really a great question. I assume you just run it on your phone and plug it into a Continuum dock.
All right. Well, yeah, we can talk a little bit more about that, I guess. Now, you said that they did some updates to DVR too, and didn't they also make this now run on your device that previously couldn't run this thing?
They did. This is probably the thing that I was most excited about from last week's announcement, and that's that the DVR server backend part will now run on the NVIDIA Shield. I've been talking for a while about how Plex DVR now works as a server, Plex works as a server on the NVIDIA Shield, which is fantastic. It runs phenomenally well, especially for a $200 box. And now I can, I had to basically go in and go back to my old PC that I was using for Plex to initially try out the DVR stuff. And now I don't need to, because I can put it on my primary Plex server, which is running on that NVIDIA Shield device.
That's really cool. I love that. And I'm wondering, what this means in terms of what kind of device support we might expect for the DVR. Initially, we noted that it wasn't available on some devices that can run Plex server. So which ones might end up ultimately being able to run DVR? It'd be great if we had someone from Plex that we could just ask about that.
Well, guys, I'm here. I've been listening in and just wanted to participate in this conversation, because the Shield, DVR, all that stuff's got me pretty excited.
Josh, who's that?
For anyone who doesn't recognize that voice, this is Jason Williams, the Director of Product and Growth at Plex. Jason, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys. Pretty excited to be on the call. So.
That's great. So in all seriousness, I mean, is there some additional discussion about expanding the device support for DVR, or are we really getting to kind of a hardware limitation line that you wouldn't want to be pushing?
So sure, we're always looking to expand that stuff to more devices. I mean, as you guys saw, the Shield, we were actually wanted to nail the Shield on day one. It was just one of those things where, like, there was one little tweak we needed to make that we wanted to hold, so we left it for the beta 2 that you guys mentioned, which was some expansion of supported tuners from the home run devices, as well as some fix ups. But yeah, I mean, there's always the balance of looking at the hardware limitations. I think what you will see as we move forward will be device support for hardware transcoding, as that becomes more and more, you know, starts to materialize, then some of these low end devices that potentially wouldn't be candidates become candidates. So I think that's definitely something that, you know, we're looking at right now.
Very cool.
All right. So Jason, we know a fair bit about Plex, and some of our listeners may know a lot about Plex, but some of them don't. So I guess the right place to start here would be, how do you describe Plex when someone's asking you, what do you do for a living? Where do you work? How do you describe Plex?
Oh, wow. Well, is that my mom asking or my friend asking? It's funny. To me, Plex is almost an ecosystem for media. And the reason I say that is you can use Plex on almost any device with a screen. So, but to back up, really what it is it's a network media player, right? So there's the Plex media server is kind of the central brain that organizes and categorizes and adds metadata, like enhances your media, right? With things like extras and great artwork for album covers and, you know, movie background poster images. So the media server kind of does all of this work for you. And then you can install a Plex client on, anything from your phone to, you know, your TV. Whether it's a, you know, TV manufacturer app store or a set-top box like the Shield, and really have this kind of beautiful experience on all the devices seamlessly and all your media, right? That's home videos, photos, TV shows, movies, you name it. So.
Nice. Now, a lot of the audience that we have has been using Media Center and has been very heavily focused on Media Center and the associated plugins in that ecosystem as it has evolved and now kind of sunsets. And so a lot of people are now looking at Plex, even though maybe we've heard of Plex for a very long time. What is the history of Plex, really? Because I seem to remember hearing about Plex long, long ago, before I was even really thinking about anything other than Media Center.
Yeah, I mean, we were a sleeper for a while, right? So we were originally forked from XBMC, which I'm sure probably a lot of your audience is familiar with. And that work kind of started and went over the course of 2 years. And then toward the end of 2010, we did our first public release. And Plex was a bit of, you know, opinionated and design and
that's an interesting way of putting that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there was a lot of other things happening at the time for customization and skinning and all these things, but we really kind of wanted to focus on the quality of the streams and the network and organization and metadata, but make it so that it was approachable and you didn't have to spend a ton of time configuring it. And so that's grown and grown within that. During that time, it was, I would consider, a hobbyist kind of, you know, software. We've kind of expanded our audience a little bit over time. And then I think you'll see with things we've done with like the Shield and DVR and then some of the stuff that's coming up soon, that we're really trying to make it more approachable for a broader set of users.
And you've kind of answered some of my next question, but you know, when you look at the other products that are out there, you mentioned that you kind of come from the roots of XBMC. So still today, you have Kodi and MB, the successor to Media Browser, which has also been around for quite a long time. Right. So there are other solutions out there. What are the differentiators that kind of make people look at Plex versus those other solutions?
Sure. So we're big fans of Kodi. Kodi itself is an incredible media player. As you know, it's incredibly flexible, but it also can require a lot of configuration potentially. And it's really more about local media playback, where Plex is taking the approach of a central brain, the Plex media server, and then streaming that content to other, you know, devices. On the MB front, I mean, they've really made some incredible strides in terms of, you know, how much they've achieved. And, you know, since they've made the switch to MB, I think is when they really, to me, you know, became matured as a software product. But I think Plex is in a unique position because of how many devices we're capable of running on, the small footprint that's required for the media server. We have the ability to port to, you know, the media server to potentially more devices in the future. And like I said, we've really focused on the aesthetic, the beauty of the UI, and the richness of our metadata. We've also been doing this for a long time. So when we talk about like metadata, like the quality of us identifying content and getting that metadata and then being able to do deals with certain partners, you know, like, you know, working with HD Home Run, the Silicon Dust guys, or Gracenote, or, you know, for our EPG. I think it sets us apart. I think it does kind of put us in a place where we are in a unique position to do more and more and bring more consumers into the Plex ecosystem today.
And I would definitely say that metadata inclusion has so improved over the years. One of the things that I found kind of baffling initially, and to be honest, kind of put me off Plex initially, was just figuring out how to make sure that I was getting the metadata, how to have things set up properly. And that all just kind of works now. People were telling me that had changed and that was all, but I didn't believe it. And now that I've tried it, I'm really impressed by it. You know, one more thing I also want to make sure you guys don't undersell yourselves on is, I think one of the things that differentiates you is you have awesome documentation, which is like crazy unusual today.
Well, we appreciate that. I'm sure the support team appreciates that. That I will tell you, our support team works incredibly hard for every new feature release to make sure it's documented. We have an incredible community. I don't know if you guys have ever been to the forums, but so many people participate there and, you know, surface information to, you know, to our support team that we make sure we try to follow up with and get documented. So I will definitely pass that on to the guys, because they work so hard to produce great documentation. And in terms of API documentation, I know we have some of that today, but so you guys know, moving forward, we're also working on really improving that for third-party developers as well.
Very nice. So obviously the biggest announcement that you guys have made over the last couple of months is this new DVR beta that you've released to the public. You know, especially over the air DVRs have gotten a lot more popular over the last couple of years as cord cutting has started to become a little bit more of a mainstream thing. But for a while, you know, basically for that entire period of time, it looked as though Plex was choosing to just sit that out, and they were going to be the media server of the content that you already had. So what kind of caused that shift at Plex to make you guys want to really kind of, I mean, it's kind of a big shift in functionality in what Plex is to bring DVR. So where did that originate?
Yeah. So we actually wanted to do, I mean, a lot of us are cord cutters, obviously at Plex. But then there's a natural alignment to kind of people who already use Plex today that, you know, are somewhat cord cutters. Most of us had home runs already in our house, but so you guys know, DVR, Flash Live TV, has really been something that's been churning internally a little bit in Plex for about the last 2 years. We started some initial planning and work on it early on. And then we kind of paused. We were kind of had a lot of other things going on at the time. We felt that we're more in line with where we wanted to go and what we wanted to do. And we also wanted to kind of take a step back and look at the architecture. And so we really kind of got serious about that earlier this year. What we really wanted to do was align for where TV is going. So it's not just, I mean, right now we have DVR and OTA, but you know, TV is going to, I think, evolve and change a lot more over the next 5 years in terms of, you know, potentially having a cable provider that, you know, you can use an app to stream your, you know, your TVs live, and then those opening up to others. So like, I think there's just going to be this landscape that's going to continually shift and change. And we wanted to be prepared for that architecturally and how we designed it. So while you can't see it all underneath the hood, we've really kind of made DVR more of a, you know, an EP, being able to pull an EPG in and then have kind of these providers that are able to go out and grab content, and tuners are just one adaptation of that grabber functionality.
Okay. So, you know, let's, you know, actually, before I get on to the next question, I do want to say that I was really curious about the origins of this, because when I first got to look at this, I thought, you know, I went into this thinking, all right, this is brand new functionality. They're calling it a beta. This is not going to be anywhere close to done. Like, this is like, there's going to be a lot of issues. And frankly, I was surprised by how well it was organized, how well it was thought out, and how well it's actually worked. I know Richard had at least one hiccup when he first set it up, but you already patched the bug that he found with this release last week. So, I'm not surprised that this has been in the works for a while, because there's a level of polish here that you don't necessarily see in betas from most software developers, I think.
Well, I will tell you, both the UX design team and the engineers, this was a passion project, right? I mean, they were super passionate about it, took it seriously. They're all actively using the feature. I think it is a little bit of a labor of love, and they worked incredibly hard to deliver this. And what we consider the Plex way, right? This may not be the traditional approach you would look at to EPGs and recording, but we wanted it to be simple. Very, very simple to use and simple to set up. And those were kind of the principles that we stood on. And hopefully that's what you see today.
Yeah. So, you know, like I mentioned at the top of the show, we were at a meetup this weekend showing lots of people Plex DVR. That was one of the big things we were focusing on this weekend. And I got the same few questions from a lot of people. One of them is, okay, this is really cool, but you're showing me all of this in a web browser. Why can't I schedule TV shows from my Xbox or from my phone or from other, you know, from the other Plex clients? When might we expect to be able to do that? Like, is that on the roadmap? And when do you think that might be coming?
It's definitely something we're looking at. We get the, you know, the gotcha there. You have to understand, with so many different clients, orchestrating, you know, the parity across all of those clients and getting, you know, all of the new UX and code in place to do that is, it takes a lot of organization in order to do that. So we didn't want to, you know, delay this in order to get that stuff moved into the clients. And we felt like at least people front can open up, you know, a tablet or their phone and mobile web and schedule a recording. So we wanted to get that out there. Of course, yes, we're looking at it. It's important to us. I want to be able to sit at the TV with my remote and schedule a recording. But I can't give any timelines on that today, but it's definitely something that we've got our eyes on and actively looking at.
You know, another thing that people really like to do when they're sitting on their couch and have their remote in their hand is to watch live TV.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Yeah, so I could say ditto. No, no, we're live TV is something that we really want to get right, and we want to think about how that fits into the ecosystem. Again, we're obviously all cord cutters. Live TV is important to us, especially when you're talking about sports.
Right.
you got to be able to, while recorded sports are good, you know, being able to watch a football game live in Plex is important to us. We want to keep people in Plex, right? Like, we want them to enjoy using Plex for all of their needs. So, yes, we're actively looking at it, and I would expect that you will see it sometime in the future. Yes.
Okay. So one more, and this one is probably the more technically challenging question out of all of these. So I'm not a cord cutter, and Richard isn't either. We both have HD Home Runs, but I use the HD Home Run Prime, your cable card tuner, or their cable card tuner. It's not yours. And it does work with the Plex DVR, but it only works for channels that don't have copy protection on them. Now, that's a dicey situation. I understand that, but is that something that you guys are looking at trying to address, or is that just going to be kind of off the board with all of the legal and technical ramifications that come with dealing with copy protection from end to end?
Right. So it's definitely being discussed internally. I will say getting DRM working is not a priority for us. We are looking at, if there are some things that make sense for us in the near future. But it's such a challenge because it affects, some people who are on some providers differently than others, and that can even be region specific. So we're in discussions on it. I don't know that we actually have an answer to that today. I will say that DRM is something that we'll probably try to avoid for a while, because of the, as you mentioned, some of the complications.
I wish everybody could just avoid DRM for a while. That would make life so much easier for consumers.
I'm not going to say DRM is completely out of the equation. At some point, we may have to cross that bridge, but it is something that will, probably defer for a while.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. And you mentioned that you're on a ton of different platforms. For clients alone, you have content, or you have your app on mobile devices, on computers. You even still have something that works as a media center plugin. You have the Apple TV app. I don't know what other platforms on. I'm assuming Roku. I don't know how you're maintaining that and keeping all of those features in parity. Josh and I actually know something about trying to keep multiple platforms in parity, and it's not an easy thing, even with a small subset. But it strikes me that you've really taken this kind of wide scatter, be everywhere strategy, and that's an expensive proposition. I have to assume that's to draw in the largest net of potential users, but who do you see as your target users? Because even though you're everywhere, I might argue that people who know what Plex is are still probably something of a tech-savvy crowd.
Sure. So I'd say our target audience is evolving. As I mentioned earlier, we started really with hobbyists, and that's at that time, that was the world. I mean, I would argue that even Windows Media Center, took some work and took a special type of person to go through and set up Windows Media Center. But I think we've come a long way. Some of that's been kind of UX and first run kind of approach for a while. You'll see an instance of that with the NVIDIA Shield that you mentioned earlier. Kind of the setup for the NVIDIA Shield was really, we wanted to work with NVIDIA because, A, the device is fantastic, but it's, ready for consumers. Plex Media Center is ready server is ready out of the box. It's a three-click setup, and your libraries are created. So I think we're looking to expand that. And then DVR, I would say, is another step toward that. expanding that user base. But I can actually see a world moving, you know, moving forward in Plex's, you know, future, where even, you know, even people who don't understand setting up a media server can actually begin using Plex. There's just a lot of things that we're working on, and that's through content and sharing that I think you're going to find that Plex is more approachable by anyone.
Well, and arguably, if you had, say, the NVIDIA Shield and you set up some channels in some of your apps, you don't even have to have content anywhere. You just now have a direct pipe to content out on the internet.
Correct. So I think, you know, channels, you know, we're really popular, and then I think we're looking to give channels some love again, maybe in a new light, but we're definitely looking to expand the capability of what a lot of people know as channels today in the future.
I'm gonna be a little bit selfish and use this as an opportunity to make my pitch. I would love it if you and the Media Mall guys got together and played really nice, and we ended up with some morphing of channels and play on. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually a lifetime member with those guys as well. I could see that. I'll have to reach out to them maybe tomorrow, maybe after this call. But yeah, so kind of also going back to the parity challenge and our target audience. I think there's one of the things that we wanted to do with Plex is make sure that your media was truly accessible anywhere. And, you know, a lot of the other operating systems and platforms, you're kind of locked to specific devices and some arbitrary decisions. There's nothing worse than someone, you know, having a new device or a TV and going, oh, I can't get Plex on it, or I can't get to my media. So that we actually thought that was important. And thank goodness we have some of the most talented engineers I've ever worked with in the world that while parity is a challenge and keeping all those features moving across all the clients, I would say we've gotten exceptionally good at it, and I think we're getting better and better every day, as you guys probably see with some of the pace of some of the things that are starting to happen now.
So you mentioned target audience and stuff, and in the chat, James is asking, he points out that in his opinion, especially the over-the-air DVR market is kind of a small market, but Plex obviously isn't just reaching out to the DVR market, but he wonders, how has the response been so far since you announced DVR?
It has been incredible, you guys. We're actually thrilled from not only, you know, the amount of people who are using it, but just the positive feedback we've seen in social media and in the forums. You know, you're right. It may be a relatively small market, but it's an incredibly passionate market. And I think it's a milestone for us too on, you know, people being able to build media collections without having to go out there and get that content themselves. Right now, their media collections can kind of build on their own. So it's also a step for us in kind of putting a new line in the sand of, you know, Plex is going to be about content of all types and all sources. And so we really, I think DVR laid the foundation from both a business perspective and the underlying code and architecture to support a lot of other cases moving forward.
So one thing that we haven't really touched on here is that while I love Plex DVR and I've been checking it out, there is one big requirement in the way of people being able to check it out, and that is that they need Plex Pass. For those of our listeners who don't know what Plex Pass is, can you tell us what exactly Plex Pass is, what goes along with it versus what's just in the regular version of Plex?
Sure. So if you haven't used Plex before, you can use Plex freely. You just sign up for a Plex account and you can use Plex, and you can use most of the, you know, incredible features of Plex, a lot of those we talked about today, which are, you know, being able to have your content and metadata and distribute it to all the various clients that we have. But we do have Plex Pass, which is a subscription service. It's $4.99 a month, and then $39 a year. And then you can also do a lifetime, which is $150, $149.99. And what that does is it gives you some enhanced capabilities. So you get things like being able to have trailers and extras for all your movies. So if you go into Plex and you click on a movie in your library, you'll see kind of the behind the scene cuts, trailers. You can actually have trailers play before your movie start for the home theater experience. You get things like lyrics for songs. You know, some features we graduate over time out of Plex Pass into the free tier. Like, we used to not be able to use Plex on a lot of clients, a lot of the TV clients, because you required a Plex Pass. But we really didn't want to hold the world back from being able to use Plex. So we said, you know what, we're going to graduate this up to the free tier. But you'll see that there are going to be a lot of features that will exist only in Plex Pass, and then maybe eventually get graduated. But, you know, some of these things that we do to enhance the experience for users, I mean, they cost money themselves, right? So we in turn, you know, have to continue to build great software. So that takes money to do that. And it's amazing. A lot of the people who actually subscribe to a Plex Pass, you know, if you look at all the posts and social media and forums, they do it out of support, right? I mean, they've been free users for years and go, you know, you guys are just nailing it, and they do it from a support perspective to support the project, and we want to maintain that kind of community. So hopefully that trend continues.
Very cool. And I would imagine that for hobbyists in particular, you're going to find that kind of following and support as you broaden your market. You may, you know, people may perceive the fees a little bit differently, but I think also some of those additional features may not be what the every person is looking for necessarily, and maybe more of a hobbyist thing to have like preview trailers and stuff like that. So,
right.
You know, I think initially when we learned about Plex Pass, it was a bit of a turnoff. And the more that we saw how you were using it to differentiate product features, it made a lot more sense to us.
Yeah, and we'll continue to align that more and more as we move forward. So I think you'll even see that you'll be able to use some features in a limited fashion without Plex Pass moving forward. So at least you get to kind of experience them and know what they're about, and then you can make it, you know, an educated decision on if you want to kind of expand your capability with Plex.
And in the interest of full disclosure, Plex has provided Josh and me with Plex Passes so that we can fully evaluate the product. So.
Ah, who gave you this?
Well, I imagine as you're talking about an engaged community, you probably also like to get feedback and incorporate that into your product decisions. How do people provide feedback, say on the DVR beta or on the product in general? What's the best way to get information back to you?
Sure. So I would say our forums are incredibly active. The DVR forum, as a matter of fact, is just blowing up in terms of number of topics and threads. But the forum is typically a really, really good place. That's where, I mean, our engineers, our support team, even our designers and UX guys spend time in there just talking, you know, and really collecting that feedback. So I would say the forum is the best place to start. The cool thing that you'll find is if you engage in the forum as well, we also do things like occasionally do roundtables, which we invite Plex Pass users into a conference call essentially with a Skype and with say 20 to 30 people, and you'll actually be there with the product team and the engineers and be able to give feedback in those as well. So I would start with the forum. I always think that's the best place. And if you know Plex well, also feel free to contribute to helping others too. So,
all right. Well, this has been really informative for us. I'm sure that our listeners appreciate it. How can they find out more about Plex if they're not already starting or using Plex yet? And what you and your team are up to?
Sure. I would definitely say visit plex.tv. It's It's basically where you can find everything about the features that we have, what's Plex Pass and what's not, all of the apps, which I think you'll be surprised if you haven't used Plex before, all the apps and places you can use it. It's also will link you off to all the downloads and explain to you how it works. But then at the bottom, you can visit the blog or support pages if you have questions. But I would say catch up on our latest 4 or 5 blogs. I think they'll kind of recap some of the stuff we're talked about. And then please, if you don't have, if you haven't signed up for a Plex account, whether you're going to go Plex Pass or not, please go do that.
All right. Well, thank you, Jason, so much for making time to come on the show and answer so many questions that we had for you guys from us and from all of our listeners. We're, you know, I'm a Plex user. My family uses Plex every single day. I know a bunch of our listeners do also, and we're thrilled about where Plex DVR is going. And for some of the other things that you teased during this conversation, I'm excited to see where this is going, and very grateful to have you on the show tonight to answer all those questions for us.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Well, while all that Plex news is great, there's other video news for us to talk about too, Richard. So why don't we jump into maybe one of our favorite video streaming, like movie provider services. That's Vudu. Vudu has announced that they've got a new Windows 10 app that's bringing their service to your Windows 10 PCs. It's a UWP app that you would find in the store. And, not really any surprises here. It does exactly what you would expect from a Vudu app. You can stream movies. You can download movies, which is cool. Take them with you on your Windows tablet or laptop. It also connects with Ultraviolet, Richard's favorite service in the whole wide world, and Disney.
That's the only reason to use it.
You don't use Vudu for movie rentals?
No, I never have. Well, and in all fairness, I'm in the Apple ecosystem, so I'm renting movies or I'm buying movies, if I decide to buy them digital only, from Apple. But the tie between Ultraviolet and Disney movies really makes Vudu something of a one-stop shop now, and it's really impressive. They put together a great ecosystem there.
And I can't think of another way to watch Ultraviolet through a Windows app. Can you think of any?
Well, in the Windows 8 days, there was
an app
for Paramount.
Oh, okay.
And yes, there was a Flickster app. I don't know if either of them ever let you download to your device, though. And that's where Vudu has always kind of pushed that envelope, but they allow that since, you know, we still don't have a common file format for you to take along with you.
Oh, man. How long does that go back? Like 5 years at this point? Oh, geez. Well, we're just happy to have this app available on Windows 10 PCs. There's already been a Vudu app on the Xbox for a really, really long time. They didn't announce any plans to port this app over to the Xbox, and it's not on Windows 10 mobile, but this is the UWP, so maybe they'll do that, but they didn't specifically say whether or not they will be doing it. All right, well, we talked about Plex. While talking about Plex, we also mentioned one of their competitors. Kodi has gained a lot of popularity over the years, and apparently they even caught the attention of Microsoft, because Microsoft actually sought the Kodi team out and said, hey guys, we've got this tool that allows you to take a desktop app and kind of wrap it up in a UWP so that you can put your desktop apps into the Windows Store, and we want to do that with your app. And so the Kodi team, of course, said, yeah, we would love to do that. And there was a fairly close a partnership apparently between the two, and now you can get Kodi from the Windows Store. Now, does that mean you've got a bunch of new features or maybe a bunch of features that you have to give up to use this? No, it's still basically the same Windows desktop app that you've always had from Kodi, but you get it from the store. And you might be asking, well, why do I care? Like, why would I do it this way? I can just go to the website and download Kodi. And I think the main reasons that they wanted to go this route are, yeah, you can go to the browser and do that, but that's becoming less common for people as people get more and more wary of malware and spyware and all this other crap. And people trust app stores more. And it's simple. You just go to the app store, you search for what you want, you download it. It's super simple to install an app from the store because it's just clicking one button. And then the other cool thing is that when it's updated, it just updates automatically. So that's those are, I think they're actually two pretty legitimate reasons for getting a desktop app into the Windows Store. Now, this isn't actually like a real true peer UWP. I'm not exactly sure what the proper politically correct way of saying that is.
Right.
It's a pretend UWP. So it doesn't mean that like now they can release this on the Xbox or now they can release this on Windows 10 Mobile, because it is still just a desktop app. It's just kind of wrapped in the UWP stuff to get it into the store. So this app will not run on your Xbox. It will not run on your Windows phone. And they haven't announced any plans that I've seen to actually make a full and complete UWP that would run on those platforms.
You might imagine that at some point they would want to do that, though. And if this gets them closer to that, that's a good thing. I like what they've done here. I don't know that I like the kind of non-standard navigation that I see in the screen caps. Now, I haven't actually tried this yet, so it'll be interesting to load it up and see how it interacts and see how it feels on the desktop. You know what I find ironic about all of this is that it wasn't like 2 or 3 days ago that Microsoft kind of finally acquiesced and said that, okay, you know what? We are actually going to provide a method of delivering desktop apps through the store. So I kind of feel like a lot of this is for naught, but it's also probably a good, very public example of how this sort of conversion can occur.
Yeah. Well, and Microsoft said that they benefited a lot from working with this team, that through this process that they were able to improve the tooling to make these apps. So we will probably see a lot more apps doing this. Maybe more in the enterprise space, I'm not sure. But it's cool to see nonetheless, and hopefully we'll see other cool products emerge from this.
I hope we don't see this in the enterprise space. I really, I don't want big font apps on my work desktop. No, 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 no.
Well, maybe not on your work desktop, but for people taking smaller machines out into the workforce and stuff, maybe. I don't know. This isn't the enterprise show. Let's not waste our time. So, Richard, it is the middle of February. February. Nope, it's not cold yet. It is the middle of September. It's the middle of fall, autumn.
Yep.
There we go. And yep, that means TV finally starting back up in most cases. I mean, we're kind of into the swing of this, but some shows haven't quite started just yet. And it's a good time to remind our listeners of some quick tips to get your media center or whatever it is that you're using in shape to be able to record successfully all of these recordings. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on this because I think most of you, you'll hear these tips and you'll go, oh yeah, like I should do that. And you don't need to give me a bunch of tips on how to do this. I should just go and do this.
So first off, do what I did and make sure you have plenty of hard drive space for the beginning of the new season, because you're probably going to want to record more than you're really going to watch. As new shows are starting, you may want to kind of, you know, taste test stuff, and your load on your hard drive is probably going to be a little bit greater than it normally would be.
Yep. Another one is if you're using maybe an older home theater PC like mine, maybe your clock doesn't exactly stay on time all that well. I know mine doesn't. Go in, check the clock, make sure that it's on time, because, you know, if it's a few minutes slow, you could be missing the beginning or if it's fast, you know, the end of some of your shows. So definitely check the clock.
You know, I feel like this is one of those things that no matter how many of the tricks and patches and add-ins and everything else that I use to fix this problem, I still end up a minute or two off every couple of months.
Yes, this is something I need to check all the time. Yep. Another one. A lot of these shows, for some stupid, I've never understood why they do this, for some stupid reason, change the name of their series every year. Key culprits in this heinous crime, Survivor, The Amazing Race. It's a lot of these crappy reality shows that Richard and my wife both seem to like. So go check those out. You know, Survivor is probably Survivor season 436, Lake Tahoe edition, and, you know, Amazing Race season number 2. So, definitely check those out and go into, if you're using Windows Media Center, because you're setting up a new series recording, you might as well go in to, the scheduled series section and go out and wipe out all the old ones that you have. There's no reason to have them in there. It just makes prioritizing your list more cumbersome. So go in and clean those out while you're setting up your new series recordings.
This past weekend, I found 5 series that no longer air.
Jeez.
So, yeah, I decided I probably don't need to be looking for those because inevitably bad data is going to start catching reruns on USA or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want that. Oh, and then one other tip. I can't believe I forgot to put this one in the notes, but fortunately, Alan reminded us in the chat. The Seton My Media Center app is a fantastic way to schedule premieres. So lots of shows that are coming on and starting, you know, right now over the next couple of weeks. You can very easily see those from the Seton My Media Center app. It's got a whole section for what are the premieres that are on tonight, and you can just schedule them right from the app.
And TiVo used to put out a calendar that would have links that went right to their programming guide to be able to schedule this for TiVo users. And I have not been able to find that this season. So I hope they're still doing that. I think that's very useful. We used to publish a premiere calendar. I need to see if I can find one that's on a feed at least so that we can make it readily available to people. I usually include that in my Google calendar during the fall.
Yeah, that'd be nice to share. All right. So any other tips before we move on, Richard?
No, I think this is good. My only advice is that when you update your hard drive, if you end up replacing it for some reason, make sure that when you do that, you don't accidentally knock out your tuners like I did and then not figure out how to fix them.
Oh, Richard. All right. Well, on that wonderful tip, let's move on to a little bit of gaming news. Maybe while I'm covering the gaming side of this, you might want to go double check your tuners, Richard. Actually, this isn't going to take that long. So, not a ton of gaming news because we don't actually cover all of the games that are coming out and stuff, even though this is the big time of the year for games coming out. Well, we're kind of light on the actual news. So, and I did get a little bit of feedback from a couple of people at the meetup this week that they thought the show was a little gaming heavy. I try not to talk too much about actual gaming, but the Xbox itself is such a big part of the Microsoft Entertainment ecosystem that we have to, right?
Oh, but the gaming goes on and on. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so let's move on. Microsoft's Project Scorpio, that is the next Xbox that is coming out next year. It's going to be the most powerful console ever released when it comes out next fall. And a woman by the name Shannon Loftus from Microsoft was giving an interview this week, and she says that when they say that the Scorpio is going to run games in 4K, that they mean native 4K. They're not talking about upscaling like the Sony PlayStation Pro does. They're talking about games actually running in full 4K resolution. And her exact quote was that all Microsoft first party games arriving in the Scorpio timeframe will run in native 4K. Now, the in the Scorpio timeframe is kind of vague. Like, does that mean, you know, at their choosing at some point after the Scorpio has been released, or does that actually mean like next fall, all of the first party games will run at 4K?
That could so easily mean within Scorpio's lifetime.
Exactly. Exactly. It's cool that she's saying this. I'm just not sure that I entirely believe it. So I guess we'll find out in a year. And to keep from boring Richard, we'll just move on to the next story. Beam, this one will be short too, though. Beam, we talked about this a few weeks ago. This is a Twitch competitor. It's an online game streaming site. Like, you play games and stream yourself playing them. It's a company that Microsoft bought a few weeks ago, which is odd because they don't exist on the Xbox or even native Windows apps. Well, they did announce this past week that Beam will be coming to the Xbox One and Windows 10 this winter. Winter is a 3-month time span starting in late December, I guess, is the optimal thing to remind people of. So we don't really know when exactly, but it'll be cool to see Beam come to the market. And then last quick story, it's the second half of the month now, which means new games with gold if you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription. On Xbox One, you can grab Assassin's Creed Chronicles China, and on Xbox 360, the original Mirror's Edge, also, of course, obviously backwards compatible, so go out and grab both of those games for free.
Cool. All right. Well, you're right. That was pretty short this time.
See, I care about you, Richard.
Now's the long part. What's going yes. on in my entertainment center? I actually have hardware stuff going on.
Ooh.
Kind of. So, first off, I was not on the episode where you first talked about the HD Home Run Xbox app. And I know that you had an opportunity to talk about that a little bit this past weekend, and that you've been playing with this a little bit. I played with it a little bit. I'm not overly excited about it at this point. And I don't know if I'm just doing something wrong, or if maybe trying to use it with a remote control is harder than using it with a controller, but I'm finding it kind of unintuitive, and I don't get any data in there. I don't get any program metadata at all.
Really?
And I don't know if I have something set up wrong or what.
Do you get program metadata on their other client apps, like on Windows 10 or on your phone or anything like that?
I haven't tried the other apps, actually. So I can give them a try and see if that makes a difference. I'm actually wondering if it's because I have like a first gen HD Home Run Prime, and maybe it's beyond its capabilities. I don't know.
It could be. I guess I'm not entirely sure about the level of support for the original HD Home Run Prime.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. So anyway, I was a little bit frustrated by that because I really wanted to like it. And then came the Plex DVR, and I'm loving it.
Oh, yeah?
I'm really loving it. Yeah, because, and I think I touched on this when we talked about this last, even though I hadn't had a whole lot of time to play with it except to notice some of the recording issues, but this works exactly the way that I use my DVR. I pre-schedule stuff, and I watch it whenever I happen to. So if it just shows up in my Plex content, that's beautiful for me. I love that.
Yeah, it is great. Like the only real like kind of hiccup when it comes to scheduling this stuff is that it is, you know, much like Plex, it is very focused on shows. Like if you know the right show that you want to record, you're not really going to struggle with this UI because you can just use the search bar to find what you're looking for and things like that. But if you just, you know, if you're the kind of person who's just kind of used to casually browsing the guide, and looking for things to record that way, then you may not like this UI as much.
Right, because you're right. It is focused much more on shows, and I would argue it has a good long way to go to learn what shows I like, because the stuff that it shows to chooses to highlight as on now, not only stuff I'm probably not going to, you know, care about, stuff I've never heard of. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see that evolve. I think that's kind of cool. The other thing that I found, and maybe this is improved with the latest beta that I have not yet installed, is that it isn't really possible to manage individual recordings. You can only manage the series if you recorded a series. So if you have a series recorded and you decided, oh, you know what, I don't need to record episode 5 because I don't want it for some reason, or I already saw that one and so I don't want to include it. You can't do that. It's all or nothing on series.
Hmm.
So I'm hoping that's something that they add. But generally, I'm really, really happy with this product. And I'm not giving up my media center yet, but I could really see this filling the place for media center if it gets to the point where it can handle my protected content and be just a reliable, bulletproof way of recording the shows that I want. Because it works the way that I use TV.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, and you don't actually have that much protected content, right?
Well, I have HBO and Cinemax and a couple random other channels that my provider, Fios, chooses to copy protect. But it's not like I'm on, you know, like Charter or something.
Right. Or me, where most of my good stuff is also copy protected.
Right. Right. So a couple other kind of hardware related things or product related things are that I finally got around to hanging the antenna that I wanted to mount in my attic. And I hooked that up to my old first generation HD Home Run blank. It didn't have a model name. It was the first HD Home Run.
Right. There's that ugly light gray one with two coax inputs on the back.
Yep. 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 That's the one. And you know what? It still works.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, I heard from multiple people this weekend at the meetup who said they were still using the really old HD Home Run tuner.
Absolutely. It still does a good job. So I'm planning, when I get my media center tuners working again, and I think that's probably a driver problem more than anything else, but I am planning on using that as primary for the network stuff, because the quality of most of the channels is going to be far superior. Now, there are a couple that I just don't get well because I seem to be equally far from Baltimore and Washington, but a good number of them, I think I'm going to get a much better signal than I will over the Fios heavily compressed content.
And I think this is a good time to point out to some listeners, especially if they have that ancient HD Home Run tuner, that yes, it still works, and it still works with Windows Media Center and things like that. But if you're hoping to use that with the HD Home Run DVR, or I believe also probably the Plex DVR, it won't work. Like, it is a bare bones tuner that just does tuning, and the new software from HD Home Run and from Plex require APIs and stuff that just aren't built into that old tuner. You'll need a new one.
Yeah. Well, it's working for me, so I'm happy with it for now. Now, I think I've talked a number of times about the problems that I've had with audio just stopping. I think ever since I went to my 7.1 sound, I have this issue where audio just cuts out on me. And that's fine with me. Not so good if I'm not home.
Right. For anybody else using your TV.
Right. It needs to just work. And so to ensure over the next couple weeks, as I have travel coming up, and it's likely that we'll be watching a lot more television and probably more when I'm not around. I need to make sure it just works. So I finally ordered the HDMI Detective, and that actually arrives tomorrow. So I'm planning on putting that in line and making sure that's working. That's the device that essentially takes the identifier that's on your TV and gets it as close to your source as possible. It's a little box that you use as a junction on your HDMI signal and gets that as close to the source as possible so that that handshake works the way it's supposed to without worrying about any delays going through your receiver and everything else as stuff is starting up. Now, TV, I missed last week, so I didn't get to talk about Star Trek's 50th anniversary. I did watch the first ever episode of Star Trek. And as cheesy as it was, I also watched it on, I was wrong on what it was being broadcast on. It wasn't a local channel. It was BBC. BBC America was showing it.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they have the restored versions. So, you know, all those really terrible fuzzy graphics and model of the Enterprise flying by the planet on string. Yeah, that's all been fixed now. So it's kind of some of the cheesiness, but not as bad. So you can enjoy it a little bit better. And I actually enjoyed trying to figure out, I wonder if that's new. I wonder if that's new. I wonder if they added that in. I'm sure that's probably not what you're supposed to do, but it was kind of fun.
Cool.
Still watching Big Brother, obviously, this week. In fact, before this episode goes out, it will be over. And there's one person I'm really hoping doesn't win. And anybody who listens might try to guess that friendship. So, also, I'm continuing to watch Justified. I am finally up to date on Mr. Robot. I have been continuing to watch Weeds. The Newsroom. I started Daredevil season 2. And for some reason, I decided to watch the first episode of American Horror Story.
Why?
I've heard good things about it. The ads look intriguing. Wow, is that weird?
Don't normally watch horror stuff, right?
I like kind of Victorian horror kind of stuff. Like, I like the, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So I thought this might be interesting. It is just weird. Way more nudity than I expected. Way more just really harsh, awful things, all in one episode. I don't know if I'll ever watch anymore.
Hmm.
I did, however, watch the Emmys. And the only two people that I cared about winning an Emmy won an Emmy.
Oh my gosh. Like, this was, I don't care about the Emmys. I don't care about award shows. But Richard, I woke up this morning and while still in bed, thought, I need to check the Emmy results. I need to see if, I can't say her name, but the actress from
Tatiana Maslany,
right? The actress from Black Orphan, and Rami Malek, the actor from Mr. Robot. They were both up for Best Actress and Best Actor in a Drama, respectively, and they both finally won.
Crazy! I could not believe it. I mean, these are like the two coveted actor positions,
right?
And two virtual newcomers in this space end up winning it. Tatiana Maslany was nominated last year. It was a long shot.
Right.
She was up against some fierce competition, some of the same competition as last year. And she won. And that just blew my mind. That was awesome. I was so excited. Rami Malek winning it just absolutely floored me. I never expected that. I thought it was amazing he was nominated. I think he is deserving. I never expected that he was going to actually win it. And for him to get that says so much about his ability, that incredible show, and the, you know, I think it's going to probably draw more audience to the show for sure. And
right.
that's a wonderful thing. And if you haven't seen his acceptance speech yet, you absolutely need to find a clip of it out on the internet, because it is awesome.
It is. And I messed up the name of Tatiana's show. It's Orphan Black. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Both fantastic shows. Very, like, I thought that she had a better chance of winning, or sorry, that he had a better chance of winning than she did. But I'm just really glad they both did. Very, 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 very cool. Especially considering who they were up against and the shows they were up against.
See, with her, I feel like what she pulls off on screen with all the roles she plays and playing off each other in those roles, I think is just such an incredible challenge for anyone. And to do it as seamlessly as she does, to completely make you forget that it's the same person, that blows my mind.
Oh, I completely agree. I just, when I looked at the nominees,
right,
I just thought that her competition was lesser than what he was up against.
Okay.
And, you know, that it's all opinion, of course, and it doesn't really matter. I'm just thrilled they both won. Now I can go back to not caring about award shows again. All right, so let's get on with my giant list of things that I've been watching and playing. or not. So in terms of games, not really a lot of time for games, especially getting ready for the meetup last weekend. But I did play more Overcooked with my coworkers over my lunch break, and I'm still having so much fun playing that game. We still haven't beat all the levels, and man, does it get hard. If you are looking to play this game, and the only people that you would play this game with, and yourself included, are all like people who need to be the leader in a situation, it's probably not going to work. Like, some people have to step back and just be order takers for this to work once you get to the harder levels. But it's a ton of fun. In terms of watching TV, Mr. Robot, I'm all up to date with that. Also, very much looking forward to the final episode this week. Very curious how they're going to wrap up most of this stuff. They've left a lot to answer in a single hour. But either way, I'll be happy to see it. And because I was just exhausted after the meetup this weekend, I did watch a little bit more TV on Sunday than I might have normally, and caught up with a couple more episodes of season 3 of Homeland. And yep, that show just continues to be awesome.
Yeah, and that's an interesting season too, because that's a bit of a transition season. It's kind of like everything's kind of turned on its end, and you have to figure out how they're going to carry this story on now that things have changed significantly. And I think they do a good job.
Yeah, I would agree so far from what I know. All right, so that's what we've been watching. We do want to hit on a few other things before we get out of here, so don't turn off the podcast just yet. So we've been talking about this Home Server Show meetup, or the Geeks Network meetup, that we were both sort of at this weekend. I was there physically. Richard was there virtually. This, of course, is the meetup thrown by Dave McCabe and Jim Collison over at the homeservershow.com and their podcast, well, Dave's podcast. And this is my third time going. It's always a fun time. Huge thanks to Dave for putting this on, and to Jim Collison for all the help that he provides with that meetup. It was, again, a great meetup. But for those of you who haven't heard, there was some bittersweet news announced at this year's meetup, and that is that the Home Server Show is officially ending. The podcast published its last episode during the meetup. It is no more. If you want all of the details, then definitely go and check out the final episode. Dave will explain it far better than I could. But he's also announced at the same time that he's starting a new podcast, and it's called Reset. And it's kind of a clever name, especially, you know, considering the timing and what it actually means. For those of you who have been listening to the Home Server Show, I think you're going to like what Dave is doing with Reset. So go and check that out. And I think I'm going to be on it eventually, and I wouldn't be surprised if Richard gets an invite to talk some home automation stuff on that show also.
Yeah, very cool. And there are 3 episodes of that out now, maybe even 4 by the time that our show publishes. So he's actually started off strong, and I saw it up in top 5 in Gadgets podcasts this week in iTunes.
Wow.
So I'd say he's doing pretty well for a launch.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one other thing about the meetup, Silicon Dust was a fantastic partner with us for the meetup. We really wanted to show off the latest Silicon Dust HD Home Run DVR stuff this weekend. So they sent us some gear that we could use to demo and some gear to give away to meetup participants. And that was awesome. We asked fairly late, you know, we didn't give these guys a lot of time, and they came through really quickly. So huge thanks to all the guys over at Silicon Dust for helping us out there. It was really very much appreciated. So thank you guys. Another quick announcement. Next week, we're just not even going to try to do Entertainment 2.0. I already know that Richard isn't going to be around, and it is my once a month crazy work week. So it's always really hard to get out a show that week. So I'm just going to tell you guys all now, you can take next Tuesday off, catch up on Mr. Robot or, you know, anything that you're watching. Cause we won't be around. We'll be back the following week. Or at least I'll be back the following week.
Yeah, you'll be back the following week. I'm going to be missing for a couple of weeks. I have some travel coming up and some other things going on. So it's likely going to be a couple of weeks before I'm back on the show. Hopefully, you're not doing this all yourself. Hopefully, you can convince Chris or someone else to join you and continue to move things along without having to carry it on your own.
I'm sure that won't be a problem at all.
All right. Well, I know we've been going on for a long time now, but we have just maybe 2 things that we want to talk about really quickly. Most of you who know Josh and me know that we work on a software product, a home automation software product called Homeboy. And that's another thing that you demonstrated at the meetup this past weekend. And I helped out with that by joining remotely. And we were there to premiere the iOS app that is now available in the App Store. So we've been working hard on getting the iOS version of this app out. It is now out. So if you are an iOS user and you have Insteon lights or appliances in your home, check that out. We think you're really going to like it. But there's more going on in the app space because our colleague, Matt Braun, has another app out in the App Store. This is the guy who did Sketch Party TV. He now has a Truth Lie app out for iMessage. So you can create apps that are built onto iMessage. This is a game based on the old game. Sometimes some people call it 2 Truths and a Lie or Truth and 2 Lies, depending on how you play it. And this is a messages version of that game. He's already been recognized in a number of publications as an iMessage app you have to have, including CNET and some publications over in the UK. So congrats to Matt.
Absolutely. Great to see you. All right. Are we done with our announcements here?
I'm tired and it's been a long day. And I'm going to miss y'all, but let's get out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you know, we may not be around next week, but you can still talk to us. There's lots of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook. When I remember to post things over there, facebook.com/theDMZ. We're also on Google+. If you're looking for other Media Center folks, there's the Windows Media Center community on Google+. And of course, you can just shoot us an old-fashioned email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And, you can still hear us. You know, we won't be around, but Richard's got another show that you could listen to. It's called Home On. Richard, what's going on with Homon?
Yeah, we kind of will be around, actually, because while this current episode that's up is still featuring Ashley Dano from Caster Communications, the next episode, which should be out just a little bit after you're hearing this, is going to be Josh and me. And we're going to be talking about Cydia and the news that has come out over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, it's kind of like you're still hearing us, even, yeah, you'll hear us next week. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. I just won't be talking about gaming. So maybe that's a good thing for some of you.
It is for me.
Right. Well, you can find Homon and Entertainment 2.0 on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. And if you like the show, we ask a couple things. Subscribe so that you don't miss any. And then if you really like us, then please head on over to iTunes, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It helps us out a ton. It helps more people find our shows. And it doesn't cost you a dime to do that to help us out. And we really, really appreciate it. So, and then of course, come back, check out the show live. We record this on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, most weeks, not always. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be live, but you can join in the chat room. We got a bunch of great questions from the chat room tonight for our interview with Jason Williams. So lots of fun to have you guys here for that. And we hope to see you again in a couple of weeks to do that. But that's going to do it for episode 383. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 384. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.